Blog Talk Radio.
Hearing this information for the very first time. What actually brought you
to this work of basically studying the Asante and how we can actually take the principles that they utilized, spiritual, economic, political, and others, in applying those principles today?
Well, it had to do primarily with my involvement in joining the Asteriscus Society, because the Asteriscus Society was in the early stages of the organization. The King of the Society made the choice to organize the society around the African system of kingship, divine kingship. And as a result of that, we were engaged with and introduced to and became functional partners with on many levels the Asante Nation of Ghana. And because of that connection, personal, desire, I guess would be a good term, to complete the educational process after finishing my master's. I wanted to do a PhD, but I didn't know what I was going to do, and I knew it was going to be something dealing with African studies, but I didn't know what, and I didn't have the resources to do it then. And over the course of the time of involvement with and learning about and traveling back and forth to Ghana and studying and being engaged personally in the divine kingship system within the Church of Society, it became just a natural outgrowth that I would do this project around the kingship itself. It has morphed over the years of mentally posturing what I was going to do, and then finally in 2008 I decided on the thesis and found the program in Ghana at the Kwame Nkrumah University of Science and Technology. So I enrolled there, and so I've been working on this project since that time.
Okay. Well, when we look at the Asante model, and judging from the past shows, and I encourage everybody, by the way, to go back and listen to the archives, because, again, if you're just tuning in for the very first time, we've looked at different models, different aspects of the Asante model. Again, politics, spirituality, and again, I want to encourage you to go back and listen and, kind of get brought up to speed on where we are. One of the things that was brought out in those previous discourses was that the terms of the spirituality, that is something that is a theme, their spiritual theme underlies all of the different aspects that we're going to be discussing. Just that spiritual piece is so important. We all know that Africans are very connected and have historically been very connected to God. I mean, everything surrounds God. You don't separate God from anything you do. So, I mean, with that being said, could you just laying the foundation for tonight's discussion, even as we're discussing economics, the Asante model of economics, that underlying that is a spiritual component, correct?
Oh, without a doubt. The as we discussed earlier on, again, a part of the impetus for working with the Asante model was the linkages that I had seen and been shown to me between the Asante and the ancient Kemetic systems, and that, as we discussed, is the oral history and some of the written history indicate that the Asante migrated from the northeastern part of Africa in what they call the Nile Valley, and that when we look at their spiritual systems and philosophies and ideals, that we find some direct linkages to those of ancient Kemet. I think we discussed some of those in the past couple weeks in terms of the understanding that God is the essence of all things, and therefore God is our true essence, our true nature, is not unique to kind of, we also find that within the Asante model. And that there's an understanding that the energy, the spiritual force or spirit itself, is the energy through which we are able to accomplish the things in life. So just as in ancient Kemet, you know, people, you know, were constantly invoking and manipulating spiritual energy, the great civilization building that they did, we find that same theme in other parts throughout Africa, really, but it's in Asante as well. So the understanding that God, since God is the essence and foundation of everything, then even economics has, you have to implore and employ the spiritual forces if you want to be successful in your economic venture. Because God is the key to all of our salvation.
So when we look at the Asante model, I'm sorry, did I clip you off?
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
I was going to say, when we look at the Asante model, in contrast then to, when we're talking about economics, I mean, we look at the United States today, this is considered a, quote, capitalist, end quote, society. The economic system is that of capitalism. What was that system, the Asante system? What was the Asante system? I don't assume that it was a capitalistic society. Could you explain how they went about their economics?
Well, as in all things in society, it's a corporate kind of philosophy. It's not an individual mystic philosophy as in capitalism. Not that individualism is not a part of it. Everyone is encouraged to be entrepreneurial, to do the work that they need to do in order to accomplish what they need to do to survive and provide for their family and to grow and develop their personal interests. But the king's responsibility within the kingship system is to provide and protect the overall arching environment so everyone can do what they need to do to thrive.
Mm-hmm.
And so the king's responsible for making sure that the rituals are done, that the protocols are followed, so that individuals, as they're working, can accomplish everything they personally wish to accomplish. And it's a different kind of mindset. For example, one of the things when I was interviewing one of the paramount chiefs or paramount kings in Asante, the person that was serving as my my interpreter,
mm-hmm.
The young man who has a good job, he's a manager, he went to school at the university, he graduated in agricultural studies of some sort, not the exact title, but that's what he does.
Mm-hmm.
And so he got a good job, he's, matter of fact, a manager for the king of the Asante, from his farms. And so chief that I was interviewing asking, well, what do you do? He's actually he's a son of a friend of the paramount chief. He didn't know him personally.
Okay.
So he was explaining who he was and what he did. And in my mind, the young man's got a good job. You know, he's managing several farms within the thing. And the paramount chief looked at him and said, you know, it's about time for you to do something for yourself now.
Uh-huh.
So we have a different mindset about the importance of the individual taking responsibility. The kingship provides the environment, a conducive environment. But everyone is encouraged to strike out and do the entrepreneurial thing if they are, which is a part of, it's a cooperative thing in that historically, so the king provides the environment, provides support for the different artisans, the different craftsmen, the different laborers, etc. All this is a part. He created villages for guilds to operate, for example, a carver's village or weaver's village, etc. So he provides the land and the resources for people to be successful, but the people didn't have to take the responsibility for their own success with the king's support. And as a result of their taking the responsibility, as a result of him providing the infrastructure and support, then they in turn are responsible for contributing back to the kingship itself. So through building up the roads or whatever it is that, you know, the resources allow them to do. So it's a cooperative economical system where everyone is working for themselves, but they're working as a part of the collective, a part of the whole, and everyone is contributing back into the whole as they continue to grow and develop.
You know, that's really got to be something that is established and passed down and, you know, for children to be brought up with this mindset. It's not really uncommon to hear about people that might come from, you know, Africa, from the continent, to the United States to study, get the information or whatever, and then go back home, you know, take the knowledge back home to help with, you know, bringing in the or bringing up village or the community from, you know, which they came. And that, to me, sounds like it had to have been something that started off in their childhood. And unfortunately, though, as of course, we know that when people come over here to the United States and are influenced in many cases by certain attitudes, the, you know, the me, the mine, you know, what happens is in many cases people forget the values that were taught to them as children. But what's interesting to me about that whole concept of these values, these cooperative values, that had to have an origin, you know, that really had to have its origin. And you can correct me if I'm wrong, but it appears to me that that origin, again, had to be born out of that divine connection. I remember seeing something on Facebook, I believe it was, about a sociologist, I believe it was, went into an indigenous tribe in Africa and, you know, did a study. They were doing studies. They were studying the people or whatever. And put a fruit basket in the middle of a field and told a group of about probably 10 kids or whatever, I'm going to have a contest. And the first one to reach the fruit basket gets to keep all of the fruit. And so instinctively, the young boys all grabbed hands and ran collectively toward the basket of fruit, which shocked the sociologist. He was, you know, I guess a European sociologist, and was kind of like, wow, you know what? And asked the question, why did you do that? Why did you hold hands and run toward the basket when whoever got there first could have just had it all for themselves? And I believe the response was something akin to, well, you know, whoever got it was going to share it anyway, you know, so we just grabbed hands and ran toward the basket together. And I think that speaks to something that is innate or definitely taught from a young age.
Yes, it's definitely that. I mean, even though, see, what we have today is a struggle to preserve the traditional values and practices and mores within culture as it's being assaulted and influenced by foreign culture, Western culture primarily. And that the example you gave where people come here and they seem to get stuck here, well, sometimes they're stuck here, but sometimes they're just here because there's the Western model does not provide the opportunity for them to contribute back home. So they come here, they get jobs, they get wrapped up in the rat race here. But all the time, all the while, many of them, I dare say most of them, are sending money back home that they couldn't get earned back home in order to help support the education and the needs of their family members.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of a catch-22. And you also find that many of them, as they begin to get toward the retirement age, all the while they're building a home, a house, back home, and they begin to move back because they realize that, you know, here, if you get aged here and you don't have the resources to protect yourself or support yourself, you're in trouble. But mm-hmm. at home, everyone will collectively address your issue. We talked last week about the clan system. Mm-hmm. And how everyone looks upon one another as a brother.
Well,
that's the reality, that if you're at home and you have trouble, people are going to come to your aid and support. There's no, you won't find the kind of homes for the age that we have here, where, you know, once you get a certain age and you can't dig for self, they put you in a home. Well, they people at in the traditional villages look out for their age, they took care of the age, etc. This reminds me of a circumstance years ago, when the war broke out in Nigeria. There were a lot of Ghanaians who were living in Nigeria. And so the war broke out, and Ghanaians were forced to leave Ghana. They were, like, driven out of Nigeria, actually. In fact, you know, you see these big plastic bags that people put clothes and stuff in when they're traveling?
Mm-hmm.
Well, in Ghana, those bags are called Ghana Must Go, because so many people, Ghanaians, had to leave Nigeria and come home with their stuff in those kinds of bags, right?
Okay.
And they were anticipating, the Western sociologists and economists, et cetera, political scientists, were all anticipating there's going to be a big problem in terms of a refugee kind of situation, with all these people coming back to not Ghana, having had to leave their homes except in Nigeria. But what they found out was there was none. All these people came back, and they were immediately given a place in their communities, in their villages, in their towns where they're from. And there was nobody that was left out in the cold. There was nobody that was not looked out for. There was nobody that wasn't taken in. So it's a different kind of understanding, a different mindset. It's that cooperative spiritual understanding that we are all brothers, and that we are all a part of the same. You know, we talk about unity, and we talked about last week or a couple of weeks ago how the Asante Nation came to be, how these paramount kings in their own right, all but one, decide to give up their autonomy so that one of them, first among equals, could become the king of the whole group to increase their power and influence in the region. And so that's what true unity is understanding that we have a collective goal and that each of us has a role to play in the achievement of that goal. And all of us can't do the same thing, but all of us can do something for that experience. And so as we're talking about economic traditional economic system, and then the king's responsibility again was to create an environment, the environment which will allow individuals to the best of their ability to survive, and not just thrive, but thrive and develop their skills and talents, take care of their family, so that all within the nation could benefit. So the idea of people that are being shut out and pushed away doesn't exist in the traditional African context. Those were all advents of influence of Western culture on these societies. As a matter of fact, there was a play. I watched a play when I was in Ghana.
Mm-hmm.
And the playwright was a brother who is very keen on promoting and preserving the tradition and showing the contradictions between the traditional African approach and the Western superimposition that's been taking place in terms of social structure and those kinds of things. The thing was, the play was called Women on Fire, and it was centered into a marketplace. And if you've ever been to Africa, you know that when you go into the marketplace is, for the most part, ran by women. And each of those women have their own individual business. And they're not there fronting for their husband. They're there. That's their business. That's
okay.
their involvement. That's their engagement within the context of the community. So these women run their businesses. And so the play was in there, and it centered around a young woman who had just come back, who had just opened up a new stall in the marketplace. Now, initially, you just thought that she was just another woman who just opened up a new business. Well, as the play goes on, you find out that she's a university graduate.
Mm-hmm.
Right? She studied economics at the university. And she went and opened up her own business in the marketplace with all these quote-unquote illiterate women, women who's just
mm-hmm.
been working there for years. So her professor comes down, and he's looking for her. He heard that, and she was a top student of his, right? He had heard that his top student was working in the marketplace. She wasn't trying to work in no corporation or getting a job at no Western company or anything. She was working in the marketplace, which is, quote, unquote, where the illiterates work. And he comes out and trying to find out what's going on with you. So she takes him aside and goes in and shows him her books, and it blows his mind that she was making all this money in her own business, as opposed to working for someone else where she would be dependent upon that paycheck.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it reinforces the idea and the inner spiritual energy within the people that are being encouraged to take the ball by the horns and, you know, do for self, work for self. And that as we cooperatively worked together, and then she had gone in and she had organized the marketplace, because obviously there was a landlord who owned most of the stalls for the women in the marketplace. And this person would be equivalent to what we call a slumlord here, right? So she had gone in and organized the women, who eventually were able to get rid of this cat and take ownership of their own stalls and their own businesses and all thrive. And so it was a powerful piece, but the real thing there, the important part of the whole piece was that if you're encouraged to just work for somebody else, then that's all you're going to have is what they give you.
Mm.
But if you are encouraged to do for self, then the limit of what you can accomplish is based on your own hard work and initiative. Now, a lot of people, as you know, more and more Westernization is taking place in Ghana, corporate setup, more and more people are reliant on, quote unquote, that paycheck. But by the same token, it's inbred into the Asante psyche that we have to do for ourselves. We have to protect and work for ourselves and thrive and benefit for ourselves as a part of the collective.
Well, as a part of the collective, is it then expected, even though entrepreneurship is promoted, encouraged, is it expected, though, that, you know, even as you prosper as an entrepreneur, again, your connection is still to the whole. You're still, that's still your brother over there. That's still your sister. That's your mother, even if it's extended, an extended family member. Is it still expected that you still look out for and contribute to the total well-being of the group?
Oh, without a doubt. You don't get to where you got by yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a Asante proverb which in English translates as, I take care of you when you have no teeth, and you take care of me when I have no teeth.
Mm-hmm.
Which is essentially saying that, you know, life is a cycle, and that as you are benefited and helped along the way, then when you're able to do so, you must also benefit and help others.
So when taking that principle and endeavoring to employ it here, you know, centuries later, then which do you think would be the best approach? Because some people say, you know, there are some people today that have just totally written off our youth, you know, just totally written them off, like, okay, that's that generation is gone, you know. But these children or young people actually have parents, you know, that obviously for whatever reason did not, could not, because maybe lack of information, lack of education, lack of knowledge, lack of training, we're not able to instill these principles that we're discussing today in the youth. So which would be the best approach Should this teaching and training be done simultaneously, both the parents and the children? But because I'm asking this, because as I was thinking about it, because the parents' role, one of their roles, is to teach the children. If you teach the children without teaching the parents, somebody's got to teach the children. You know, it's got to be an elder that's going to have to teach the children. So would it be behoove anyone or any culture that's looking back and determining from the Asante model that, hey, we need to, you know, utilize some of those principles, would it best be started with the parents?
Well, at this point, this is where the teachings of ancient Kemet can come in and aid us all, in that these principles, these values, these laws, these moral concepts and precepts, we've lost here. They've been driven out of us. We've bought into, unfortunately, for the most part, hook, line, and sinker, the Western idea of capitalism, do for self, individualism. Pull yourself up by your bootstraps, you know, et cetera. Get a job, get a good education, get a job, et cetera.
I got
and
mine.
Because
you
we
get yours.
Into that, yeah, I got mine, you get yours.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, we find ourselves isolated and powerless. You know, that people would like to throw around numbers. I think the latest number is that the collective wealth of America is something like $1 trillion or something.
Mm.
And people are going to say, well, if we just harness 1% of that, whatever, whatever. Well, that will never happen because we don't see ourselves as a collective. We don't see ourselves as one. We don't see the all-seer within us.
Mm-hmm.
And this is why the initiation process and program that we talked about, the spiritual cultivation that is required and takes place through the initiation process, is so important. Because, as you said, the parents have to learn at the same time that they're teaching the children.
Mm-hmm.
So what is it that the parents are learning and what are they teaching the children? Well, if we're not teaching ourselves about the oneness that we are reflective of, this divine being that is the true nature of each of us, if we're not focused on awakening this divinity and modeling this divinity in our lives such that I can see God in you and you can see God in me and we can come together and be the God that we are, then everything else is going to fall short. We're going to be left with the human experience, which is always going to be limited and fall short of accomplishing the goal. It's not possible for humans to unify. Yeah, humans can come together around certain ideas, certain concepts, certain themes, certain events, etc. But that's not true unity. Unity is an understanding that we are one, regardless of everything else.
Mm-hmm.
We have an opposition. I mean, take the Western political system as we see it unfold. It's adversarial. And since it is adversarial, it has to promote this adversarial mindset and behavior between parties. So there can be no unity if the adversarial concept and appreciation is not from the understanding that, yeah, we may have an opposite position, but we are not against one another. We are one. And we're only one if we can see ourselves as what the people in Kemet call an Osir. If I don't see that I am God and that the same God that I am is what you are and everyone else is, then I'm going to see the separateness that humanity expresses and I'm going to respond to that separateness. And therein lies the problem. So until we get to the point where we can, each of us, focus on and redefine who we are, understand our true identity, our true nature, our true self as being a divine being, and understand that these situations that we're confronted with in life, these challenges, these issues, whatever we want to call them, are all there for one purpose, and that is to awaken the divinity within us so that we can be proclaimed an El Ser during the course of our life and we'll always be at one another's odds with one another and all this confusion and chaos that takes place in the world.
Well, if you could for a moment or talk about holiness and the God expression, because just from, you know, a few of the comments that you made just now, you talked about, you know, being Osir and seeing the God, looking at your brother or your sister and seeing the God in them as they see the God in you. Well, growing up here and the concept of God that's been presented to us in the West is that, you know, God is holy, okay, and therefore any expression that does not fit into that, quote, holy, end quote, box is viewed as unholy or sinful. And so when the expression of someone, for example, based on their, this expression could just be based on their level of development or lack thereof, now, just doesn't fit into that box. So for example, you might take somebody that's a thief or, you know, somebody that just might be living a life that just doesn't fall into that box of, quote, holiness. Then the person that's viewing that judges that other person as ungodly. So could you just briefly talk about that, just that whole discussion is deep, because if we are to be divine beings, then we need to know what a divine being looks like, and that even when an expression is put forth that does not fit into the holy box, you know, that we understand that this is where this person is, this is their level of development, but the expression does not make them any less godly.
Well, that's the problem. The problem is that in the West, there's a belief about God, what God is, as opposed to a knowledge about what God is. And our ancestors crafted these 11 laws that we've been discussing over the course of this series and the previous series as a means through which we can identify what it means to be a divine being. And if I violate a law, that doesn't mean that I'm any less divine. It just means I violated the law, that I haven't awakened that part of my spirit, or I haven't cultivated that part of my spirit, or there's still a chink in my spirit as it relates to that law. But that doesn't mean that I'm not divine, because my spirit isn't cultivated to express my divinity. Two parts of our being, as we've been saying. There's the conscious part, which is the divine consciousness, that I am the creator of all. And then there's the spirit, and the spirit is the functional part of being. So if a person falls down as they're engaging in some activity, that's a spiritual defect. But that's another part of the problem in the West, because they don't have the sophisticated nomenclature to identify how the spirit functions. In the West, all you got, people say, well, there's a spirit. Well, our ancestors identified, no, it's just not a spirit. There's seven different functional levels to the spirit, each of which has its own keys in terms of expression, and each of which has its own ideals straight through it. So if a person is a thief, as you say, so that means that that part of the spirit, that when they see that they are one with all, that they are their brother's keeper, et cetera, how can you steal from yourself? A thief is a person who hasn't cultivated the understanding of the part of the spirit that says we are all a part of one unit. It's like you taking $5 out of the left pants pocket and putting them into your right pants pocket. Has the pants gained or lost? No, you should understand that there's one pair of pants and it has $5. Whether it's in the left pocket, the right pocket, on the leg, or the cuff, wherever it is, the pant is the pant. We are one. We have different aspects, different spiritual applications, different spiritual parts, each of which has its own role to play in the overall functioning of this one body. You know, a good analogy, as we discussed in the past, is the human body. And the human body has trillions of different cells, different functions, different lifespans, etc. But all of them contribute to the overall expression of this one entity. But if I go into the doctor and I say my body hurts, how can I help? How can I be helped?
Mm-hmm.
If I go and say there's a problem with my spirit, how can I be helped? If I don't know, if I haven't taken the time, if I haven't learned, if I haven't been taught that this part of my body corresponds to this and this part of my spirit corresponds to that, how can I benefit from the knowledge? And that's the problem. The Western man has yet to cultivate the knowledge of the spirit. Unfortunately, our African ancestors had done so. And so it's about us learning this knowledge and applying this knowledge and correcting and purifying or perfecting these different vehicles so that each of them functions to the optimal, which affords us the ability then to function as a divine being on earth. It's like if you have a car and you don't put the right kind of gas into the car, you're not going to get optimal performance from that vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then the person might say, well, you know, this thing is stealing my money. Well, no, because you haven't learned how to cultivate it properly. So these different parts of the spirit, these different laws, these 11 laws of what each person has to be taught. But it's just not about the knowledge of the law. It's also about the experience of living and applying the law. And the only way that can happen is through an initiation process where one can be guided to show and shown what the law looks like, how to respond and function with the law, and someone to monitor a person's evolution and development. No one is proclaimed any kind of professional or trade master without someone else's support and assistance. You know, you don't become a surgeon by just saying, oh, I can operate on people putting up a sign. Someone's got to verify it. Someone's got to certify it. Someone's got to guide you through the process of learning. So the same is true in terms of awakening and becoming a divine being, a God man or a God woman. Curriculum is a protocol, there's a process that we each have to go through, which we have to be guided through in order for us to be certified as we have awakened there. If I haven't done it yet, it's not because there's something wrong with me. It's just there's something wrong with me, right? It's not my nature. It's my spirit. It's my function. It's my body. So,
mm-hmm.
You know, if I fall down, then it doesn't mean I'm not a divine being. It's not my true nature. It just means I haven't cultivated and developed my spirit, the part of my spirit that will enable me to express that nature is not developed from it. So, and then we look at all the things that people in the West are confronted with and assaulted with. And we talked about these in the past, the drugs, the alcohol, the tobacco, the marijuana, toxins in the environment. All these things undermine the spirits, the bodies, and the spirits, which the physical bodies are part of the spirit, and the animal body or the animating body or the chi body, or the key body, whatever it's called, in different cultures called different things, is a part of the spirit. And this spirit, these bodies, are adversely impacted by environmental toxins. And so if I live in a culture which is constantly promoting, you know, you can't watch a football game without being told that you need to drink beer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so but I'm drinking this beer. Why? Because I'm adversely impacting the function in my brain. I'm adversely impacting the function of different organs in my body. And then we wonder why people act ill, because people are ill.
Everybody, my special guest is Orwa Hehi Metara in Comet. Would a good analogy also be, Orwa, picking up on the vehicle analogy, that let's say, for example, someone's brakes aren't working and someone says, hey, man, you know, you're running late for work today. He's like, oh, man, I had to take my car to the shop. He doesn't necessarily say I had to take my brakes to the shop. brake is just a part of the vehicle that needs to be worked on. But when he's referring to the brake, he's actually just referring, he's referring to the car. He says, you know, he might ultimately state that, yeah, I had to get my brakes fixed, but the brake is no less a part of the car just because it's broke.
Yeah, and the worst part about the whole thing is if you take it to the mechanic and he doesn't know what's wrong with your car, he thinks the car is not working.
Mm.
So people have these issues, and they go to people who are supposedly counselors or spiritual people or whatever, and they still don't have the nomenclature or training to identify what this particular aspect of your spirit is what needs to be worked on.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's just the world we live in. So fortunately, though, our ancestors did enough of a job to promote and preserve their understanding, their books, their scholarly work, their spiritual work on the spirit, the scholarly work on the spirit, so that we can come now and regather, reclaim, and reuse this knowledge to improve our lot in life. And as we talk about the problems that we're faced with in this society, et cetera, well, as long as we are functioning from the perspective of I'm a human within this environment, we're constantly going to have these same problems. It's only when we change our attitude will we change our altitude.
Well, Brother Orwell, could you talk about the, true success and the accumulation of material things? Because as we're talking about economics, you know, a lot of times people think that, for example, you take a woman who's looking for a quote, good man, end quote, you know, his economics has got to be in place, you know. And not to say that money doesn't have its place in this culture. You need money to survive. You got to eat. You got to have a place to lay your head. You know, you need to get back and forth to wherever you got to go. All of these things take, you know, well, you could walk to wherever you wanted to go. But, you know, in this society, you got to have money. But could you talk about true success versus the accumulation of things? Because as it relates to this discussion on economics, people could think that, you know, a successful person is one that where economics, and again, economics, when people think economics, they think money. They think that, for example, let's just take an example. Let's take somebody that's rich. You know, they could think, oh, that's a good catch. You know, he's successful. Could you talk about success and the accumulation of things?
Okay.
Or versus the accumulation of things.
Yes. There's a concept within, and one, in terms of the research that we used was sustainable economic development, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, the traditional Western idea of economic development is that you have to increase your quote-unquote GDP by 3% or 4% or whatever every year. And that's what's called economic development. It's the development of things. We got to make more things. We got to sell more things. We got to generate more money from things. And that's,
mm-hmm.
if we're not doing that, then the economy is stalled. It's not growing. It's not developing. Well, that's one model. But then there's a group of economists, a small group at this point, but a growing group, saying that growth, in terms of material growth, is not sustainable. There's no way that you can continually grow and sustain that growth in a fixed world. And its resources are fixed. There's a limited number of resources. So it is not practical or possible,
mm-hmm.
to constantly evolve through the manipulation of things, growing things, because you have a finite amount of resources to work with.
Mm-hmm.
So this new idea of economists, this new group of economists, are working from the perspective that true economic development has nothing to do with things, it has to do with people. If I'm developing people, then that's the development that needs to take place. Now, unfortunately, well, it's the same way I have to look at it, their model, their concept, does not have the African comedic base in terms of what does development of people look like. But they at least are on the right track. They realize that you can't constantly improve and create new things when you have finite resources. So what is it that we have to do? We have to develop people so that the people are able to better utilize the resources that we have, as opposed to just burning up resources. It's not that we don't have enough resources, it's that we're not using them properly. We're constantly wasting things.
Mm-hmm.
So the improvement of the person is what's necessary, because that engages the person and allows the person to then see how they're wasting the resources. But if I'm not looking at it from from the human perspective, I'm constantly going to be battling back and forth about the resources and the challenge of the resources and my quote unquote desire for new things.
Mm-hmm.
Because the comedic approach, as we discussed, I think, a couple weeks ago, even in the tradition of the Asante people, even though unfortunately it's being lost, is the understanding that peace is the true value of life. Everyone wants to be happy. But unfortunately, the Western model of happiness says that happiness comes from things, the accumulation of things or the avoidance of things, whatever. I'm happy if I get this new car, I'm happy if I get this new wife, I'm happy if I get rid of this old wife, whatever it is. As opposed to happiness being the appreciation that I am, my nature is at peace. Everybody wants peace, but peace, humans believe that peace is linked to something or another, as opposed to the Kemetic people and many Africans historically, traditionally, who understood that no, peace is understanding that I am all I need. There's nothing that I'm going to get that's going to save me. I have the skills, the talent, the resources within my own spirit that will provide that salvation for me.
Mm-hmm.
And we're constantly being pushed, the Western model is constantly being pushed that you need something outside of you in order to bring about this peace or this salvation or whatever. Well, the African mm-hmm. understands that, no, I come into the world with a spirit that has the ability to do whatever is needed to be done. So I come with my own salvation. All that I learn how to do is use it there for it. I just have to learn mm-hmm. the key to unlock it so that I can apply it into my life. But when people are looking at things and going after things, I need more money because I need this thing. But why do I need this thing? What's the role this thing has to play, or what's the role this thing will play in the overall development of person moving toward my divinity and toward the movement of mankind toward this divinity? If I believe that I need this thing to become, to have happiness or peace, then I have violated several laws, the most important of which is the law of Amen, the number one law. So, yeah, we need things. We need money to have things. But those things are not the key to our happiness. Those things are the vehicles through which we are able to tap into ourselves and enjoy the peace that I have. You know, the law basically says that I enjoy what I have when I have it, and when I don't have something, I enjoy the peace.
Mm-hmm.
That's how we have to approach it. So if I have a new house, I have a new car, or whatever, I can enjoy that thing, but understanding that it doesn't give me joy, I'm just enjoying it. Because when it's gone, I still enjoy the peace that I already always have. Peace is my true nature.
You know, you talked about how the, you know, things outside of you, we've been taught you know, in the West, that things outside of us make us happy. Like, again, you give the example of, you know, you're happy, you get married, you have a nice wife, okay, I'm happy, she leaves, I'm not happy, you know, you get a job, oh, I love it, you know, a couple of years later, you hate it, you know, you get a new car, it's great, a couple of years from now, I don't want it anymore. These things outside of yourself. What's interesting is even when we look at religion in the West, even if there's a Christian prayer that states, Our Father, which art in heaven, okay, that, if you just stop there, you know, the premise of that is that God exists outside of you. God is in heaven, you know. Now, of course, you know, we've all heard that the kingdom of heaven is within, but when you look at that, you know, on the surface, Our Father, which art in heaven, if you're not of the mindset that you are one with the Creator, that you are one. There's a scripture that says, Know ye not that you are God's children of the Most High God. If you just stop with the Our Father, which art in heaven, thinking that heaven is in the sky and you're living on the earth, that separation or looking for things outside of yourself, even God outside of yourself, starts there.
Yes, and so therein lies the problem.
Mm-hmm.
So we allow, again, we've been raised in this culture amongst these people, and we accept their idea of the world, and that's why we have the problems we have. That's why we'll always have the problems we have, because the problem is that their idea of the world is not accurate. And if, no matter how good your intentions are, if your premise is wrong, it's not going to lead you to the right conclusion. I don't care how much you believe that two molecules of hydrogen plus four molecules of oxygen will give you water, it's not going to happen. So you have to understand what the laws are. You have to apply the laws, live the laws, and then you'll reap the benefit of the law. So, but you got to know what it is first. And fortunately, our ancestors left us a wealth of spiritual wisdom and knowledge to guide us, to lead us, to show us what and how the spirit operates, what the spirit is, the different functions of the spirit, different levels of spirit. And if we just continually to believe that I just have a car as opposed to a car that has many functional parts, and I take it to the mechanic and I say my car is not working, then I can't expect anything better than hit and miss. But if I can say I have a car, and it has brakes, it has a fuel line, it has, you know, motor train, it has all these different things, and I can go in and say the motor train is not working, and my mechanic knows what that is, then he can help me to improve the functioning of my vehicle. So, but in the Western experience, unfortunately, the spiritual understanding that you just have a spirit. They don't know anything about the nuts and bolts of it, the gears in it, and how it operates. You just have a spirit. When you go to people, you got a spiritual problem. Okay.
Brother, if we could, I know we've got a couple minutes left. We're looking at the economic model of the Asante, the role of bartering, you know, because you mentioned earlier in the discussion that, you know, everybody can do something, you know. So if somebody has a skill and or a product or something that they want to trade for goods and services, goods or services, could you talk about the role that bartering plays or played in the Asante model? Because you don't see or hear of a lot of bartering today. I'm sure it takes place, but I would assume that that was something that was prevalent among the Asante.
Well, that was the initial economic system. Then they developed the use of things to represent that, like cowrie shell or ornaments or pieces of rod or pieces of cloth. So, but it's all about assigning value and giving fair trade for that value, fair exchange. You know, as long as it's fair exchange, there's no robbery, they say.
Mm-hmm.
And so, if I'm growing tobacco. If I'm growing lettuce and you're growing raising chickens, And I want chickens and you want lettuce, and we have to figure out, well, what is the value of one chicken? How many heads of lettuce is that?
Right.
And we make an exchange. So, and we both get what we want, but we're both at peace with what we got. It's a win-win situation. But when I create an unjust system where for what I give you, I'm not getting my fair exchange, well, then we have a problem. And that's what happens in the Western world. You know, ultimately, be such that, well, it's not going to be such. It is such that people don't get paid based on their true value or worth, but based on the system that's been put in place. You can't tell me that the guy who's the CEO of the company, who the company which has lost $1 million, we'll say, deserves $1 million bonus. And the people that are working in the company are making $10 an hour,
right.
$15 an hour.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So the unjust application and practices of the Western model come from out of the unjust standing of mankind. They believe that humans or animals or whatever, and that they don't understand the law of the third law of our spirit, Tuti, which says everything must be resolved in a win-win situation. So if I'm being taken advantage of by someone, if I'm taking advantage of someone, then I'm violating that law. But I'm only going to do that if I don't understand that this is innate. The law is a part of my being, and it's a critical part to me realizing and accomplishing my true goal and destiny, my true divinity. And if I'm under the mindset that I'm a human and you're a human and we have these animal tendencies, etc., and the dog-eat-dog world, and the rich go with spoils, to the first man, just the whole bowl of fruit from the example you gave earlier, then that's how I'm going to function, which is always going to be undermine our ability to collectively work together and come together and unite and be an expression of the divinity that we are.
You know, Brother Orwa, I know that there are a lot of people that are listening that are loving the information that you're sharing, and they want to know more. They want to know, you know, how they can actually that change. They know that what they heard today, you know, struck a chord within them. You know truth when you hear it. And I know there are people that want to know, well, how can I get with a study group, or, you know, I don't know if there's an Osiris Society in my city. What number can they call to see whether or not there is an Osiris Society that's near them? Because, again, there are groups out here that you can actually get with, study with. There are a couple of books that I want to recommend. One is Kemetic Success by Ra'un Nefer Amen. That's Kemetic Success, Achieving Health, Wealth, and Happiness Through the Ageless Teachings of Ancient Egypt. That's, again, by Ra'un Nefer Amen. The other book is also by Ra'un Nefer Amen. It is Ma'at, the 11 Laws of God. Ma'at, the 11 Laws of God, also by Ra'un Nefer Amen. Brother Orwa, what number can they dial? Is that the New York number to find out if there is a HESP near them that they can study further this?
It's 718-469-3199. 718-469-3199.
Would you recommend the Medunite? I mean, that's heavy. I mean, you know, just as far as a book for people to get started. You know, those of us who've been following Shechem and Shechem for a while, of course, have the Medunite. But for those who are just getting, there's always new people being exposed to this information. Would you recommend another book besides Kemetic Success and Ma'at, the 11 Laws of God?
Well, I would recommend the Medunitaire, but I would recommend Medunitaire Volume 3.
Okay.
and it, which is more in line with it, it's clearer in terms of the language that we're using now, in terms of being a divine being and what that looks like, the historical references for to prove that this is not, you know, that there's a belief in Christendom that there was only one divine being who walked the earth, that was Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
But in ancient Kemet, we have records, historical records of hundreds, surviving records of hundreds of people who were proclaimed the divine being by their peers on earth.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not something that you have to be half man and half God to be.
Mm-hmm.
You have to just awaken the divinity that you are in order to become it. And so the Divinity of Three gives those historical references as well as begins the process of explaining what that looks like. So March 11 Laws is good, and I'd recommend those three books are a good starter. Of course, you need to go back and pick up the rest of the Divinity of series, but as a beginning, I personally would recommend line up for what our discussion is, Volume 3.
Okay. Everybody, my special guest today is Owahehi Metara and Comet Paramount King of the Washington, D.C. region of the Osara Set Society. We've gone over the time a little bit, brother. I don't want to monopolize your time. Were there any final thoughts that you wanted to share with our listeners as it relates to the discussion today on the economic system of the Asante?
Well, lining up with what we've been discussing in terms of the spiritual underpinning of this whole thing. As you know, this is the we're moving up on the winter solstice, which is the most important time of the year in terms of the transformation, like the spiritual correction, or just our spiritual gyroscope, whatever term you want to use, whatever metaphor works for you, in terms of moving us toward awakening this divinity. And there's for those that are not in an area where these classes, preparation classes, are taking place, there's an online program that they can purchase and participate in. It's a 5 or 6 class thing, probably 5 or 6 class program to guide them through the preparation for the solstice, understanding the value of the solstice, and how to get the most out of the solstice experience and moving into the new year. So on December 25th, when they wake up, there will be truly a God arising within their spirit. So they can get that information at the same number, 718-469-3199.
You know, picking up on that also, I just want to make an announcement that for the people in the Richmond, Virginia area, Hekshemsu Heru Shekeme Abneter is going to be doing a winter solstice workshop on Friday, December the 11th. That's this Friday, from 7 to 9 p.m. And there's going to be a $6 donation for that. And if you'd like more information as far as where it's going to be, please call 804-687-6505. Again, that's 804-687-6505. Also, this past week, Shekem Sahanktuku Nenebu did an awesome, powerful show on preparing for the winter solstice. So I want to let everybody know these shows that we're doing that you're listening to are archived. So you can go back and listen to whatever shows that you missed and share those shows with other people. But definitely listen to that show. It's very, very powerful. Again, Shekem Sahanktuku Nenebu did the show on the preparation for the winter solstice. And I just want to thank you, Brother Orwa, again for being my special guest today, for this powerful, powerful series, for being very gracious enough to come on and to share your wisdom with us. We're growing, and again, judging from the numbers, people are constantly. I mean, this show is growing. Health, Wealth, and Divine is really picking up steam. A lot of people are, you know, tuning in, and I just want to, again, welcome the new members. We've got powerful, powerful shows again. We did a series on the 11 laws of God. You can go back and listen to that. Well, Brother Sanu Parah is coming up on December the 15th. We're going to be discussing Bazi astrology and parenting. Also, this Friday, my special guest, we're also doing a series, Five Element Balancing Qigong, is Shekhameta Uneta. And so you want to go back and listen to those shows to bring you up to speed so you can get caught up on where we are in that series as well. Brother Orwa has also written a book called African Names, The Ancient Egyptian Keys to Unlocking Your Power and Destiny. I'm sure that book is still in print, and that you can call the New York number, and I'm sure they can instruct you on how to get that, or you can go to, I believe it's www.tawinetwork.com, is it, Brother Orwa?
Yes.
Okay, and you can get that book there as well. Again, thank you so much for your time, Brother Orwa. It's always a pleasure. I learn so much every time we speak, my brother. My listeners do as well. So thank you so much for your time, and I look forward to our next broadcast. Which model will we be looking at, or which aspect will we be looking at next week?
The environment.
The environment. Everybody, mark your calendars. Get ready to tune in for another powerful show. Again, don't forget Metta Uneta this Friday, talking about the five element balancing Qigong. And again, for those in the Richmond area, Hexham Suharu Shekhameh Abneter is going to be doing a winter solstice workshop on Friday, December the 11th from 7 to 9. There's going to be a $6 donation for that. For more information on where it's going to be, call 804-687-6505. Thank you again, Brother Orwa. I'll be in touch, my brother. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Everybody, that is Orwa Hehi Metara in Comet, Paramount King of the Washington, D.C. region of the Oseraset Society. Again, everybody, I want to extend my thanks to you for your time. Again, Health, Wealth, and Divine is about health, wealth, and your divinity. So if you just scroll down the archives, you will see that all of the shows that we do are relating to one of those categories, your health, your wealth, and your divinity. Until the next time, my name is Juwanza. Have a wonderful day. Peace and blessings.